Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I'm excited to be here today moderating today's webinar on why the carrot is better than the stick, the best tips and tools to motivate collectors. Getting collectors to do their best work can be tricky. Making sure they are maximizing the amount of money they are collecting while being compliant is definitely no easy feat. And trying to appeal to individuals with different sensibilities and needs in terms of what is going to be incentivizing them only makes it harder. I'm thrilled to bring you a panel of collection industry executives who are here to share their tips and tricks and which incentives work best when motivating collectors. This webinar is being sponsored by Solutions by Text. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about accountsrecovery.net. Accountsrecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling is the Chief Compliance Officer at Contract Callers in Augusta, Georgia. She has decades of experience in first and third party collections, focusing on utilities, telecom, and medical debt. She is very active with the Georgia Collectors Association, a member of Inside ARM's Compliance Professionals Forum, and is a certified instructor for ACA International. She also holds the Credit and Collection Compliance Officer designation, as well as the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives designation. LaDonna was also named ACA International Certified Instructor of the Year at the association's convention last month in San Diego. Irene Hoheisel has been in the collection industry for more than 22 years. She began as a collector and quickly became head of the collection department, as well as training, leadership, and compliance for ARSI. Irene has served on multiple ACA committees and has been quoted and published in multiple articles in Collector and Pulse magazines. She is an ACA certified instructor and a source for many due to her extensive knowledge of medical collection and the laws that cover it. Irene has earned an alphabet soup of designations, certifications, awards, and recognitions for her knowledge in the collection industry. She serves as president of the Kansas Collectors Association and regularly presents educational seminars for ARSI clients, as well as ACA, Chambers of Commerce, and many other associations like mine. Kelly Krieger is the vice president of organizational development and training for CBE companies. Kelly has 22 years of experience as well in training and development and currently oversees all matters relating to employee development and engagement. She's been with CBE on and off since 1996 and specializes in sales, persuasion, customer service, recovery, and management training. Her trainings focus on the development of human talent, utilizing the latest innovations in human performance technology. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please type it into the question tab on your Zoom, your Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everyone to hold a minute or reserve a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Your participation helps me develop content. That's what you're looking for, like the topic we have today, and to identify the speakers you want to hear from, like the people you're going to hear from starting in a minute or so. So with that, let's launch into today's discussion. First, I thought maybe we'd start at a very high level and go around the panel and talk about how much can the right incentive motivate a collector? You know, qualitatively or quantitatively, if you want to, or both, if you can share, and maybe share an example if you don't mind. And Kelly, since you're up on the screen now, maybe we'll let you go first.
All right. I'm going to say, especially in this business of collections, I think the right incentive is the one thing that's going to get those collectors to be highly motivated. It's a tough job and it's an entry level job. So knowing that they can start at, fairly low pay, but knowing that they can make a lot more money really motivates them. So I think the right incentive can motivate a collector to do the right thing on every call and to be motivated to stay in the job. Because, I mean, the thing is it's really hard to find really good collectors. So if we find them, let's motivate them and incent them to stay and pay them well enough so it's a job that's not just a job but a career. So I'll pass it on to the other speakers.
Well, this is Irene. I feel that we have to look at your collectors, who you have, what's your pool, what's it look like, to know what kind of motivation it's going to be. I'll give an example. Let's say I have a young mother who's a collector. Let's say she's single. Maybe she's struggling a little bit with money. Things that are going to motivate her might be different than somebody who's out there that, you know, they're a little bit older. They have two incomes. They're not struggling with money. She's just been a collector for a while. This is just her job, her career. But she's not that financial struggle. It's going to be real different. I mean, something as simple as I have no money to take my kids to the movies, given that movie tickets out as a motivation is going to be a lot more delightful to that mother who really every penny goes towards taking care of her children and nothing's left over for the fun things or even for things for herself. Like if you give gifts away, sometimes we do contests here right around school when school's beginning where they could earn just it's a real fast thing. Like we call it the first. It's like the first person to reach a consumer, the first person to get a payment plan, the first person to not get angry over someone who's yelling at them, the first person to update an account. There's a huge list, but on our table we have school supplies. So anybody, when you're the first person to do it, you get up, you get the school supply that you need, and then when that list is exhausted, we start it over again, and we do that all day long. And you could see it helps the parents that just don't have that money. That's not going to incentivize somebody that doesn't have children in school. We do the same thing at Christmas time when it comes to stocking stuffers. I mean, we try to use something that's going to motivate the group that we have at the time or the period at the time. So, you know, looking at that, but that person who likes, you know, who's not really there for that money type of that monetary reward, they might like something you do just for fun. Like people love to make fun of the leaders. I have done, and I'm sure LaDonna could probably share because we know she's just as crazy as me. And there are times we do things. I'm not afraid to be embarrassed. I don't get embarrassed easy. And I'll drop it like a hot dance, Michael Jackson, run around the office high-fiving people and, you know, sing a song they wrote for me to sing. Whatever it is, it makes them feel like it's fun and they have the incentive to do that. LaDonna, you got any suggestions?
No, but when you said drop it like it's hot, I do that all the time and the collectors just love it. But that's why you and our kids are spirits, Irene. But I think that, you know, trying to find out what drives each individual collector, that can kind of be exhausting. So I like to look at things a little bit more holistically, you know, not just specific motivators, but I think the best motivation is our company culture, you know, and that starts from the top down. And I want to give a plug to an author, Daniel Pink. He wrote a book called Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And he wrote it in 2009, and I think it's just even perfect in this day and age. You know, so this was written before millennial was an everyday term, and he had pretty much three parts, you know, about your culture, so to speak. Autonomy, people want autonomy. You know, there are a few things that we can do. You know, as a collector managing, let our collectors manage their inventory, let them manage their schedules, let them feel like they're in charge. And then mastery is the second part, allowing employees to, you know, enjoy a sense of progress at work. And Kelly, you know, mentioned it, so that they have a career path, so they're mastering something. And then people want a purpose because we all want to make a difference, do something that matters. You know, we're at work more than a third of our lives, and I think we start there by letting our employees understand what our mission is, you know, where are our organizational goals, you know, do we, you know, live and breathe the collector pledge so that they feel like every day they're doing something worthwhile, you know. So I take all three of his, the autonomy, the mastery, and the purpose, and I call it the AMP method. So that's just my take on it.
Yeah, I like to add, it also depends on what you're trying to motivate the collector to do. Like Kelly and LaDonna brought up, when you look at that long-term picture, they're 100% on point with what you want to try to incentivize. If you're trying to change a behavior, let's say, you could create different types of incentives to create that behavior also. It's a matter of what is the whole picture? Because sometimes incentivizing is big picture. Sometimes incentivizing is small picture, something that you want that day from a small group or a large group, depending on the size of your agency. So I think, yeah, taking all that into mind, you really need to consider what your bottom line that you're trying to actually do at the time, what you're incentivizing.
yeah, the short-term incentives, mm-hmm. the long-term incentives, I think that, you know, they're all appropriate at some time, you know, like, you know, I'm competitive. I am so competitive where, you know, I got to win at
really?
Any cost.
Really, Lizana, yes. You're competitive?
Yeah. So, you know, collection is for somebody like me. And I think, you know, if we all sat back and looked at it, our best collectors are the ones that are, you know, very competitive. They have that need to win, that need to be on top. They got to be number one. And, you know, we had to find ways to let them reach that, but then kind of curtail them, you know, from a compliance perspective, because, you know, I just want to reach number one by any means, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have that same thing. We have collectors who have been here long-term and they're highly competitive and they'll win at any cost. Now, in regards to the compliance side of it, but what I think what hurts us in that area is where we've learned is that those people who've been here long-term, if you only have an incentive program that maybe pays out the top 50%, then only those people who've been here a long time who are highly motivated and competitive are the only ones that are winning, which makes that incentive program not work for those people who maybe aren't such drivers and pushers, but are really great, you know, middle of the road collectors, which we still need as well. So I think that's one of the struggles that we've had is the balancing act between the competitors and then the people who are really great at building rapport and building relationship with consumers, but maybe aren't as quite as competitive. They're in for the long game, not for the short game.
Yeah, that's correct because, you know, I've seen us run games and then, you know, I've heard, you know, people, you know, say, well, you know, what's the point? You know, George's going to win. George always mm-hmm. wins, you know, or so kind of makes you have to look at those people that are, you know, pretty much, you know, our bread and butter folks. You know, we got our superstars, but, you know, our folks that, you know, grind out every day and produce, but they're important too. So we define the things like Kelly pointed out that's going to keep them in the game and, you know, make them feel like, you know, they're participating and make them want to do it.
One of the things that we did to overcome that, because we had the same issue, was we change things up quite often. And sometimes the games go contest or incentives that we do are group oriented, whether it's the entire company trying to reach some type of goal, or we have six different teams and our, you know, leaders will name their team and things like that. But we have six different teams and sometimes we have the teams compete against each other, which because they're all about the same amount of people. But other times we have the entire company do a pass or fail. So everybody, it's the total of what everybody does together. So if I have that brand new person that came in that's feeling like, oh, they're doing a contest, but there's no way I'm going to win it. They get a reward, whether it's a whole thing. We have one we call hopscotch. We have a very strange floor in our offices. We have little, our carpet is like little squares. So they get to, we mark the carpet on the floor, physically mark the carpet with tape, and they have to get so many different incentives to, like, let's say that it might be payment, it might be a compliance issue, whatever it is, but they get to move their, each person gets to move to the next square. When they reach square 25, let's say on the wall, I physically have a taped envelope saying everybody in the office gets Sonic drinks. And then when they reach the next 25, and we keep going like that until there's about seven different awards. And by the end reward, they've gotten Sonic drinks. They've gotten lunch on the company. They've all gotten a 15-minute break. They've all gotten 30 minutes off. They've all gotten a $10 bonus or $25 bonus. But it's the entire office that runs together. So everybody participates. Even if you only moved it once, everybody participates and it works great. But even with separate teams competing against each other, because you're going to have some weak and some strong on the team, it kind of causes people to say, hey, you know, get on that phone or do this or make sure you're getting that or let me help you with that or I heard you in it, because they're all trying to work together as a team to try to get their numbers or their competition up so everybody wins on that team. So that's actually helped quite a bit with those slower people, the people that don't usually get involved or the ones that are brand new.
Mm-hmm. We do something similar to that too. We also do the personal best program. So do better than you did last month or do better than you did yesterday or do better than you did last hour. So they're really competing with themselves more than the others. Upper echelon of the collectors there's no way they're going to beat. So it works really good for new hires, but it works good for those middle of the roaders. You know, only 20% of your staff really are the best of the best, and then you've got that middle 60 who are
they're making you money.
Yeah, they're making you money consistently, but maybe not the top of the line. And then there's that bottom 20%. And the bottom 20%, we're probably never going to change. We're probably never going to motivate them that much. But if when you do the did you do better than you did last hour or last month or yesterday, they know they can win by beating themselves. So
right.
Sometimes motivates them to do more than they did yesterday.
So Kelly, do you give them any rewards? What kind of rewards do you give them when they've achieved, you know, when they beat themselves?
Well, and we really, it's at levels. So, I mean, sometimes it's gift cards. Sometimes it's a drawing into a, like a big prize. So like if we have a big TV or we have like a meal for your family, like something big, then we will, give them a ticket. And if you beat your last hour, then you get a ticket. And the people who are at the bottom, those are the ones who actually have more tickets than the ones who are at the top, because maybe they aren't the ones that have tried as hard in the past. So we do many things, gift cards, drawings. They get like we pass trophies around. So, I mean, it just changes all the time.
But don't y'all think that gains and, you know, financial incentives and such, for the most part, those are short-term motivators, you know, because, you know, with our budget, I can't afford to do, you know, a game every week. So we try to put things in, you know, that are free, like casual days, you know, Wall of Fame, you know, social events, you know, like sports day, like we're getting ready for football season. And, you know, we're going to have some team spirit things going on. But I'm really more about getting the person to learn how to motivate themselves, you know, because, you know, I started out as a collector with a headset on, and I like for people to see that they can do that and do what they want to do within the company. It's pretty much theirs to do, but, you know, finding something that's going to challenge them or make them want to do that and not consider this just to be another job, you know, because
agree with you.
We opened up with, you know, it's hard to get good people, you know, once we get them trained, they're like, dang, this ain't for me. I didn't know it was going to be like this. There's so many regulations and such they have to follow. So, you know, I try to get them to be empowered, you know, and feel it, you know, feel the passion for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's good to ask your staff what they want. I mean, we send out surveys all the time asking, you know, even when we have a let's say a few months of games and things, we'll say, which ones did you like best? Which one did you like least? And it's amazing when you see the feedback that you get from the season staff. They get angry when you do some type of contest or incentive that they feel incentivized the wrong behavior, like them getting, oh, this game was no good. Everybody was out of their seats all day long. Like that kind of stuff could actually demotivate some of the people that are there, because what they're doing is good. They're getting on the phone. They're doing their job. Or if you have somebody where you have physical things, because we don't always just do monetary things. We do a lot of fun things. And I remember years ago, we had this game we called Popping Balloons, where we filled up, but we still play it, but we play it different now. We had a bunch of balloons filled up with little pieces of paper inside with things to do. And it was kind of like gambling. When you got the pop balloon, it could be something good. It could be something you did to somebody else. Or it could be something slightly embarrassing, like you had to recite a poem to the rhythm of Mary Had a Little Lamb up on the top of the stairs so everybody could hear you. It could have been something like that. But we had some people that were heavier. Like then there was one thing where it was you had to sit on a balloon and pop it. And this person got that and she was devastated. And we realized that we had to put alternate things in there or take those things out completely. So you have to be careful about what you're expecting from staff, because some people are very shy and don't want to do the type of things that you're asking to do when you're trying to make it fun.
One of the things that we do that doesn't cost us any money is we incent our employees to be what we call the go-to person or the shadow me program. It's not a team captain role. It's not a promotion, but it's so when new hires transition to the floor, you get this opportunity to be the person that we say, okay, well, this person's your go-to person. This is basically your mentor for the first 2 months or the month that you've been on the floor. And that's a big deal to be the person that basically knows what's going on and knows how to do it right and can be seen as a person that is a go-to person. So we have found that really motivates people to do the right thing, because they want to be a person that's looked upon as as a subject matter expert in the role that they're in.
We do something similar. We call them buddies.
Yeah, and it works. It works. People want to be the best, and sometimes money isn't what proves that. Like, people can't see money. Like, your peers can't see money, but they can see that you're a buddy or the go-to person.
And We implemented,
when you said the best, a Bob team called Best of the Best. And, you know, these were folks that, you know, met certain criteria, you know, length of time on job, had to be here at least 90 days or more, start out hitting their goals, showing improvement, increasing their post dates every month, good compliance scores, and then they joined the Bob team. And the Bob team, they made their own schedule. And, you know, I pretty much said, I don't care if you never work another late night or ever work a Saturday. If you want to work 4-10s, that's cool, but keep your production up. You want to work 4-9s and a 4, you want to work it so you have you're off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and you work Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, ever how you want to work it. And I was amazed at the number of people who aspired for that, you know, worked out with their home life, their school life, and, you know, it got to the point of where then we had to tighten it up a little bit because, you know, everybody was getting on the Bob team. I'm like, okay, well, who's going to work Tuesday night? You know, nobody was working Tuesday night. So that was a good problem to have.
We did something similar to that too, in two different ways. We do shift bids in one of our divisions that they have to work lots of nights. So the better you are, the better shift you get. But we also did say as a team, like this team that we called them Rockers, and they were the best of the best. But we said this is the coverage you need to have in order to stay successful and to hit the goals that we needed to hit for this client. You guys work through the schedule. You guys own the schedule and figure out how we're going to get to where we need to get. So they were accountable for their own hours.
I think the more you involve them in the decision, the better, the more on board they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they hold each other accountable too. So if somebody calls in sick, then they had to find their own, they had to fill that spot, and it just, right. They didn't want to let each other down either. So
when you don't even have to figure it out, they come to you saying that this is done and so-and-so's taking my shift, and you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, easy. Life is easy then.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you just have to have a really good self, like somebody said it earlier, a self-managing team. So we have to teach them how to motivate themselves. And then once they do, we need to reward that behavior.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, we're definitely off and running on our conversation today. I just want to step in for a moment and pause the discussion briefly so I can say a few words about the sponsor for today's webinar, Solutions by Text. Solutions by Text is a division of Marketing Response Solutions, a privately held corporation whose primary focus is delivering critical information in an SMS format worldwide. Solutions by Text has developed a proprietary software designed to adhere to regulations within the mobile phone industry. Solutions by Text strives to develop a scalable solution with flexibility to meet industry changes in demand, maintain a functional user interface with various user access options, build products delivering a clear, consistent value, and construct a suite of services matching the demands of the consumer. For more than 25 years, SBT has partnered with a variety of organizations and multiple industries to design and implement a diverse SMS solution. Solutions by Text customizes a suite of services to meet client requirements and maintain ease of use. For more information, please visit www.solutionsbytext.com. Thanks again to Pam and the team at Solutions by Text for sponsoring today's webinar. Now, let's pick up our discussion. I had a question. You know, you've all thrown out a lot of great incentive programs, motivational tools that I think are really cool. The one question I have is, it seems like it can be kind of difficult to manage having so many programs going on. So I'm curious, is it you only have one program at a time, or if you have more than one program going, how do you kind of manage all of these different programs at the same, you know, going on at the same time? Is that something that's easy or hard to do? Irene, do you want to go that one first? Oh, sorry, LaDonna, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just think it's hard to do. So we like to do one, you know, at a time and do it well, because, you know, it's hard managing it when you have some rules or fences around it, because somebody has to validate, you know, the person that's winning or the goal was achieved, you know, et cetera, before, you know, the carrot is given, so to speak. So, you know, I like to keep it simple.
This is Irene. We actually have a whole bunch going on at the same time, all the time. We have a corporate challenge that goes on where the company meets it. We've gone on trips together. That one's a harder one to do, but it's always ongoing. I mean, we've gone to Las Vegas. We've gone on two cruises. We've gone on an all-inclusive trip to Cozumel. But it's been 3 years since we went on a trip, because it is very hard to do, and you have to do it consistently for a few months. But that one is always going on. We have another one that we do every other week. So twice a month, we have to meet a goal, and that one is always for food. And people love food. The thing is with that one, it's our admin team runs that one, where they're paying attention to the numbers. And if we hit the published goals, what we need them to hit, mid-month, and they have a party, a food party, and then the end of the month, they could have another one. And the thing is, if we miss it, we don't offer that again. Like, we just missed, what was it called? The hot wings. So we're going to do hot wings from Buffalo Wild Wings, and they missed it. So we didn't get it, and we're not going to run that one again for a year. So they feel they missed it. They were excited for it and missed it. But we maybe missed two a year. So every other week, we're putting a big thing of food out to people. And then we have every Friday, our collectors have a game or contest that's running. But only once a month, it's for money. Every other time, it's either for some type of recognition or just for fun. And they never know which week it's going to be for money, because we don't want them to feel like that, well, how come we're not having a money contest today? Because contests and things like that should be as a reward. They shouldn't be expected as part of their compensation. So we feel it doesn't incentivize people if they feel, well, why is this month we're doing something that's not money, it's only fun. So we have this going on constantly, and we have five different departments in our organization. So they do their own incentives and games and contests at the same time too. Then we have quarterly contests that are constantly running. I mean, we have a lot. The way that we do it though is mostly the department heads do some of it, and the admins in each department are the ones that handle the rest of it. So we keep it on task, and we always could contact them, and they'll tell us where we are.
I mean, for us, we have, you know, the commission plan and the commission structure, which is run by our finance team. But each division has their own contest or fund that they can pull from. And sometimes it's run by the whole department, like that whole department will run a contest, or they decide, let's just do it based on our supervisor team. So it changes always. So it's really up to the supervisors to run all of the incentives that are more of the fun and the contests, and then the commission side of it, that just kind of runs behind the scenes. So we have found that that's really easy to do, because, you know, they just, a lot of the behind the scenes stuff we don't have to worry about, but the supervisors are the ones that know their people and know how to motivate them. So they're the ones who really focus on that.
And I think
I was going to ask Kelly a quick question. Do you ever have any grumbling, you know, amongst the teams? Like, you always have that one rock star, so to speak, who, you know, has the best ideas and the coolest things going on with their team. Do you ever have, you know, people saying, well, why can't we do what that team's doing, et cetera?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is that we used to have that a lot. And then, so what we decided to do is we had all the supervisors get together and brainstorm what they're doing, or talk about what they're doing, so they share best practices before they roll out their contest. So they either do it in a meeting, or they'll send each other emails saying, hey, this is what my contest is this month. And a lot of times they buy stuff for it. So like if they have like a, you know, Hawaiian theme contest, the supervisors will buy like, you know, Hawaiian theme stuff, and then they just share it with each other. So like what the supervisor is doing this month, like one supervisor had built a Plinko board. You know, where you take a disc and you put it at the top of this board, and you, wherever it lands, then you get that prize. So somebody's borrowing that next month. So they really do share best ideas and and make sure that they're all on the same page. One's not doing better than the other. Because what we were discovering is some supervisors just are not good at it. So they do nothing fun for their collectors, where the cheerleader's out having a blast with her collectors. So,
yeah.
I think it's hard when it's different. That makes it hard, because when you have, like, for instance, a clerical department, everybody does something different, unlike the collectors, where they're basically doing the same thing. It's easy to match apples to apples. Do you have that, Donna or Kelly, do you have that, where you have to try to figure out how to incentivize non-collectors through contests, and they come back saying, well, collectors get all the perks, so how come collectors always have all the contests and we don't? Have you figured anything out to fix something like that?
I mean, the one thing that we have pretty good conversations about that the support staff, that, you know, their job isn't like a collector job, right? It's if they want to have contests and incentives and commissions, then we're more than happy to let you be a collector.
That's that's my take on it. I've said that to some people, but I think I hurt feelings when I said
because there was
collectors can be jealous of both. Like, you can't be jealous of the incentives they get but not want their job.
Yep, that's how
right.
I feel.
Or their schedule.
Or their schedule. Yeah.
Right.
Like,
or their schedule is right, Donna.
Support departments, they get flexibility where collectors might not get flexibility. They can, you know, support departments can go to lunch as a team where collectors can't. So,
exactly.
Like, we like to share with them what their opportunities are in regards to having fun and incentivizing each other. It's just a different beast. But the thing is that collections, that we don't get paychecks without our collectors.
Yeah, there was a while ago, we had a rash of complaints from our clerical department saying that collectors, it's not fair. They get all the contests and all the perks. And so I can't help it. I went into the room there and I said, hey, I heard I got a bunch of people that want to be collectors. And they said, what? I said, yeah, I heard that you guys, you know, we do move people from within. So who's going to try out to be a collector? And all of them said, what makes you think I want to be a collector? I said, I heard you said that you like the perks we get and that you feel that that's the place where it's fair. So you're welcome to come on board. And every one of them said, I don't want to be a collector. I could never call people. I said, well, if that's how you feel, then you need to be quiet. Because if you're not going to want to do the job, then you should understand why we do those perks for them. And I walked out. And I had nobody complain ever since.
I mean, the other thing is, it could be a leadership issue, too. So if your clerical team is complaining because they don't have incentives, then maybe talk to the leadership team of the leaders of that team and say, you know, maybe you should start thinking about how you can incentivize these people. And,
yeah, and
not financially, but like have contests, have like mm-hmm. little competition amongst each other about getting certain things done. So maybe they're not jealous of the incentives, but maybe they're jealous about the fun they're having.
And we
know all of our clerical staff, you know, if they were new hires, you know, I wouldn't say off the street, but, you know, off the street with no industry experience, you know, they shadow collectors, so they kind of get an idea of what the collectors do and see how, you know, what the collectors do, you know, creates jobs for them to do, so to speak, because I thought, you know, everybody in our organization, they understand that, you know, the collection staff, that's the beast, and we all feed the beast. You know, we support the beast, whether it's sales, compliance, you know, client services, everything is working around the collection staff, and I try to make sure that everybody understands that. So we've had that disgruntlement in the past, and I ran a terrible contest one time where I paired clerical staff with collectors, you know, pick a collector, you know, like pick a racehorse, and if your horse wins the race, then, you know, you'll get, you know, extra incentive, and then there were just so much terrible things about that, because then, of course, like people saying, you know, she's in clerical and she's making sure that all the payment posters got payments, that if it came in, high payments were put on her account, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not even going to validate this anymore. That was a terrible contest.
Yeah, we've learned our lesson on some contests, too, but you got to try things and see.
Yeah.
I'd like to come back to this worst contest, but yeah, I think that could be a good conversation. But I wanted to jump in for a second because we had a couple questions come in from the audience, and I want to use this as an opportunity to remind everybody, if you have a question for the panel type it in, and we'll get to it before we wrap up. The first question is a good one. Why do we need to run contests when the collectors are on commission? Shouldn't they be motivated by that?
Well, let me take that one.
Go ahead.
Because what they do is hard. It's a hard thing to sit at a desk for 8 hours with a headset on. You got consumers in your ear. You got quality assurance. You got compliance. You got your supervisors walking around, you know, putting you in check. And it's hard. And you can move on down the road for the same hour we had with not as much stress or pressure. And burnout is not a KPI, but burnout is high in our industry, so we have to do things to keep the good people when we do attract the good people.
All right. I'm going to use just a couple words there. Avoid collector burnout.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all about employee engagement too. Like getting people to want to come and work for your company. With the unemployment rate the way that it is, people can just go and get a low-paying call center call or even a low-paying job. And I'm not saying these are low-paying jobs, but these are entry-level positions. They can go work at Quickstar I'm probably Midwesting myself here, but I mean, they can go work at a retail shop or Walmart or Target and have like lots of perks just for working there. So what are the perks of working in collections, right? You get yelled at all day long and you're kind of strapped to your desk and you can't really get up and move around because you have so many goals. So how do we make that job fun? And how do we how do we make them stay with our organization? I always say we all work for money. Like we all come to work every day because we need to make money, no matter what people say. And we want to make more money by commission. But I want them to run into my company every day because of how they feel when they're in the building. And that's what contests do. And this generation, what's in it for me? Right, the collectors that we're hiring right now. What are you going to do for me? What are you going to do to keep me? And we got to figure out how can I keep you? What can I do to make you love coming here every day? What can I do to make you want to create an environment of energy so everybody else around you is motivated?
Yeah, you can't have the attitude that well they're getting paid for it so they should do it. I mean, even though that's a true statement, it doesn't put all the other variables of longevity and loyalty and, like I said, avoiding burnout, all those things you have to think of. Otherwise, you're just hiring over and over and over and over again, and that's a huge expense. So the expense you have on these smaller things to keep those people here, I think outweighs the cost of everything else 100%. Plus, you walk into an office where people are laughing, where people are happy, and it makes it a better place for you, too. Kelly mentioned what's in it for me. Talk about what's in it for you as an owner or a leader. I mean, I love coming to work. Everybody that I work with here, I consider my children. I mean, I care about them personally, and they care about me. It doesn't mean I have a problem letting them go when they're not doing their job, but at the same time, I love seeing them happy, and it makes the environment wonderful to work in. What a healthy environment for everybody for long term.
I have grown in my leadership skills because at one point I shared that sentiment because my father was military, and I kind of had that military mindset. Like a drill sergeant, this is what needs to be done, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to get it done today. And, you know, you work that fine line, and my mindset, you know, historically was, you know, you're going to get paid, here are your benefits, you come and you will do this job, but then I realized, you know, this is a heck of a job to do, to expect people to do, and that's why, you know, we have so much churn in our industry, is we're not doing anything to keep these people when they walk in the door, and we do it to make it a fun environment and offer people an opportunity to grow.
The one thing that we talk about here a lot is the service profit chain, right? Happy employees equal happy consumers. Mm-hmm. So if your employees love what they do, and maybe they don't love what they do, but they love who they do it for, then they're going to treat the consumers better. The conversations are going to flow better. You're going to hear happiness in their voice, and they're going to sound more engaged, which equals more money, right? So
and equals more, less lawsuits and less complaints to clients. And I mean, the big domino effect from that alone is worth it.
Yeah, and the cost of replacing employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Hope we answered your question. The person who's asked, why is it?
I think so. Another question. How much on average are you allocating per agent per month? Can anybody share details on that?
I mean, for us, we do a percentage of dollars collected from the month before. So, you know how you allocate so much to commission based on dollars collected. So it's always a percentage of the month's prior collection. So however well they did the month before equals more money the next month. And the collectors know that. The collectors know that if we have a really good month this month, then the incentives or the contests are going to be better.
That's a good idea. I don't do that. Because a lot of the contests we do are either long-term, quarterly, you know, like I described before, but our weekly contests that we do, not many of them are monetary. So basically, there's not a real big budget for that because we don't need a real big budget for that. I mean, their compensation as far as goal bonuses and commissions, that's incorporated into their, you know, their pay of what we pay them. That's different. We don't look at that as a budget for incentives. But yeah, that's actually a good idea. I really like that. I think I might steal that from you, Kelly.
Yay.
Hey, so bouncing off that, when do you do your contest? Because, you know, a few years ago, I thought, why am I spending all this money on contests during tax season? The money's going to roll anyway. So, you know, repurpose and spend more of our money, you know, during, you know, the end of the third quarter, or fourth quarter, or summer months. What
kind of seasonality
is there? Any seasonality to it?
Did you ask if there's seasonality to how we do it?
Yes.
I mean, the thing is yeah, tax times higher, but their goals are higher too.
Yeah.
So they have to achieve more based on the seasonality. Like their goals are based on the season of the year and their portfolio. For some areas, seasonality means nothing, right? Like in some areas, they're not getting a tax return because, you know, the government garnished their taxes and we're doing government collections. So that's not a good thing for us. But so it is still, we still base it on how you collected in that month prior, a percentage of it. So, because we still need to motivate them the next month.
Right.
Yeah. And then some verticals differ too, because I know we do a lot of utility. October, November are good months for us because, you know, it starts getting cold and people need to have their gas turned down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, some of our departments will, if we have a really good month and they like, for example, November was, or let's just say September was a really great month, but we know we're going to need to be really motivated in December because it's always the worst collection month. Right. Sometimes supervisors will agree that and work with their team and say, hey, we have this much contest money for this month. Should we not use all of it and maybe use some of it in December so we can get more motivated in December so we can have better contests. So maybe we can help, you know, buy Christmas presents, you know, right, for collectors. So they do sometimes carry it over from month to month. They don't use it this month and they'll use it next month.
Go ahead.
There's one of the small things we do to make people throughout the year want to be like employee of the month through all departments and things like that. At the end of the year at our Christmas party, anybody that was an employee of the month, anybody that was an honorable mention, anybody that got stuff like that, we put them in a pool and we do a drawing and give them like a TV or an electronic piece of equipment or something like that. And that incentivizes people to overall behave well without monthly incentives because they want to be chosen as employee of the month and be in that drawing at the end of the year. And it's not a huge expense to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike. We have Wall of Fame.
Okay,
something
sorry.
Like that.
A question that came in wondering if there were a different formula or ideas if the collector is paid on an hourly rate versus paid versus commission. Does the incentive or the incentive offers change at all?
Well, this is Irene. All of our collectors are paid the same way. They have a decent base salary and then they earn commission on dollars collected. So we don't have any difference in our incentives as far as in our on the floor incentives. We do have a difference in what we call goal bonuses. So if they reach certain periods, certain amounts of dollars over their goal that they, you know, tenured goal, it raises as you're here longer and then caps off after 3 years. But if you bring in over that amount at any time, they'll get goal bonuses for every extra increment of money they bring in. So that does affect somebody as far as, you know, how well they're doing in their tenure. I guess that might be the closest I have to that.
We have collectors, and then we have clerical staff that works within that collection department, outside of like customer service. So they're like our PPA collectors and things like that, or they follow up on forms. They're hourly, they don't get commission, but they're still part of the contest that we have, or the incentives that we have. Their ticket to entry is much different than the collectors. So they still have to meet their KPIs in order for them to get into the contest. But they add value to the collectors. Like without these admin people, our collectors couldn't collect the money they do. So they get to be part of that program as well.
Okay, interesting. A question I wanted to ask. Irene, you mentioned that, you know, you were talking before about some of the bigger contests and the trips and how the organization hasn't gone because it hasn't sort of achieved the whatever the goal was. And I'm curious, for each of you, how much of a stickler are you when it comes to incentives and bonuses? I mean, do they have to get it, or if they get close, do you have some wiggle room? How do you handle those kinds of situations?
I could tell you we don't have wiggle room. Otherwise, you're going to have some people complaining, well, you gave it to her last time, why didn't you give it to me? So we do not have wiggle room.
I mean, we have programs that are like kind of like plateau programs. So if you hit 100%, then you get 100% of your commission. But if you only hit, you know, if you hit 50, you get nothing. But like if you get 80%, then you get, you know, 50% of your commission. If you hit 90%, you get, you know, 75% of your commission. In order for you to get 100% of your commission, you have to hit 100%. So it's not all or nothing, but there's levels to obtaining it.
Now that's interesting. Have y'all always done it that way?
Are they all incented that way?
Yeah.
Some of our divisions are incented. Most of them are incented that way. Not all of them, but most of them. Some of them are all or nothing, but.
I guess I can rely on commission. When it comes to commission, yeah, if they reach their goal, they get 100% of their commission. If they don't, they still get 50% of their commission. But when it comes to any other type of incentive, like contests and things that we run for the company as a whole, that is either all or nothing.
Yeah. Good point. For contests, it's either you did what you need to do in order to, like, permission to play, or you don't play. That's why we have contests.
Or you appear. Or you come across as being subjective when you know, within the rules, I think.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Yeah.
Okay. We've talked a lot about the carrot. I'd like to spend a couple of minutes maybe talking about stick, the other end of an incentive. Are there situations where penalties work better as a motivator than rewards? And maybe if you could share some of those scenarios, if you don't mind. LaDonna, would you mind tackling that one first?
Sure. We all know that there's consequences for every action, and we try to make it personal, and you know, we want the individual to change the behavior, you know, rather than, you know, beat them with the stick, so to speak. But, you know, eventually the stick comes out, and if you want to break the stick with, you know, termination or some type of aggressive discipline, then it's just a necessary evil in what we do, because if we don't have consensus around what we do and some rules in, then we're going to have people who are going to rule by any means necessary and do what it takes to win, to get their permission to go on top.
And this, Irene, I truly believe that I much rather incentivize somebody to do something and make them want to do it than have them fear doing it, because I feel that if you want to do it, you're going to do it when I'm not around. If you fear to do it, you may do what you want when you think somebody's not looking. But with that said, definitely there is appropriate time when the penalty has to happen, when the stick has to happen. And I think that's more like you have to be thinking to yourself, what is my goal with this employee? I mean, if you really honestly feel that they can do the job, you got to be the cheerleader. You got to be a little bit more of like a cross between the carrot and the stick, where you tell them, this is what's going to happen if it doesn't change, but I know you could do it. I know we could fix this. But there are some people where you have to just say, hey, you got till this date and that's it. And if it doesn't happen, you're out of here, or whatever that stick might be. So I do think there is a time for it, but I hate to see you start with it. I hate to see you start with a reprimand without giving the opportunity for the positive first. I like people doing things because they want to, not because they're afraid to.
So every human being is either motivated by what they have to gain or what they have to lose. So you got to figure out which one's best for you, which one they are. So if people are motivated by what they have to gain, that's that what's in it for me. So those are the ones who are like, yeah, if I do this, what do I get? And then the other side of the stick is that what happens to me if I don't do this? What are the consequences? And you will actually it is not evenly divided. More people are motivated through fear than they are through benefits. So making sure that you have accountabilities in place, knowing that if you don't do this, then this could happen. And it doesn't have to be a big stick. It could be a little stick, right? Like if you don't do this, then if you do this right, then you avoid this. So just having those conversations, whether it's disciplinary action or, you know, having to be part of a performance improvement plan, or having people sit beside you in order for you to learn how to do your job better, or you don't get to be a buddy this month. So what we do is we publicly post numbers too. So if you don't want to be at the bottom, that's, you know, if you want to avoid being at the bottom, then you work harder. So sitting down with those collectors and going, okay, what motivates you? Are you motivated through what you have to gain by doing a really good job? Like, are you motivated about getting a commission check, or are you motivated by, or are you scared about not getting a commission check? Right. They're the same thing, but just which one motivates them more, the fear of not getting one or the benefits of getting one?
And be careful with
that fear. Because then you hire us all the time. So what happens if I don't get my commission? Yeah, so there's that fear that's always there, and I, you know, try to break it down and explain it to them, you know, as long as you're making progress, you know, toward that goal, and we're going to help you, you know, we try to eliminate some of that fear. But most of the behaviors that, you know, we have to provide the consequences for really aren't horrible behaviors. You know, most of the time they're technical offenses, but, you know, because we have rules and policies and things that, you know, we have to comply with, you know, we have to, you know, let it stick out sometimes.
And be careful with that stick. Don't threaten something you're not willing to follow through with, because then it becomes an invalid threat and means nothing. So if you're telling somebody XYZ is going to happen if you don't reach this point, and then you say, well, I'll give you another month, or, hey, don't worry about it, we'll fix this. Well, you tried your best, but you didn't get there. And if you keep saying this will happen, and then it doesn't happen, that stick is, it might as well be a piece of rubber. It does nothing. So make
sure. Yeah, isn't there a saying that says big soft and carry a big stick? It doesn't say carry a big carrot. Just kidding. And what about that?
Don't put it, if you don't fix this, you're terminated, unless you're willing to terminate that person.
And I think it's really important that if you're going to have a stick, that you communicate that stick at hire during the interview process, so they know that these are the expectations, and this is how we hold you accountable, and this is how we help you, and this is how we develop you, and this is how we motivate you. But we're going to reach our hand out, and our goal, our expectations are that you reach your hand back. And if you don't reach your hand back, then there's consequences to that. Like, we can't want this more than you. So if you don't want this as much as then this is the consequence for that.
So Kelly, you said something, you know, that, you know, you post your collector's numbers, you know, their progress, And we do that as well. And, you know, in my course of 2 decades plus, you know, I just only had a handful of people who didn't like their stuff posted, you know, on the boards. And typically they were the folks that were in the bottom. And Irene, do you post your people's numbers? You know,
yes.
Hopefully so everybody can see them? Yeah.
Everybody knows, the entire office knows, not just the collectors. Everybody knows where people are, and we do it for two things. One, to make the stars feel good and shine. Two, yeah, to let new people see it's doable. So if you're complaining, you're giving me an impossible job, and look at how many people are surpassing our goals. And I guess the third thing, too, it helps those that could do better, you know, the more seasoned people that are just your average, to see that it could be more, maybe to feel a little slight embarrassment over it and want to make that not look that way the next month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you start to want that recognition.
Absolutely. It's definitely a little bit of both for us, too. But we do talk about it at Hire. Like when we interview people, we say, you know, one of the things we do is we do post your numbers publicly. It's what we do. So if that's something you're not comfortable with, we just need you to be aware of that. And it's not to shame anyone. It's never a shaming technique. It's
right.
It's just how we keep track of where we're at. Like the overall goal is we have a mission to hit a number. And it's not an individual number we're trying to hit. It's a group number. So you play an important role on this team, and we're better together. And if you just need to pull everybody needs to know what everybody's doing to contribute.
Not only that, but when the time comes, say that low producer, you do have to let them go. And they're in the office saying, it's not fair, I tried my best. They could see. I mean, you're not going to get that conversation, because they would have seen over months and months and months time that, yeah, but look what others are doing and what you're not.
Maybe it's just not the job for you.
Yeah.
Redirection of your career.
Yep.
Well, we've only got a minute or two left. We kind of timed as well. But before we wrap up, what I'd like to do is give Irene, Kelly, and LaDonna the chance to share any takeaways, any parting words of wisdom, anything they wanted to talk about but maybe didn't get a chance to because the conversation just didn't head in that direction. But it's still something they wanted to mention. But just any sort of a chance for everybody to summarize before we wrap up. LaDonna, would you mind going first?
Sure, and I'll finish how I started with, I think it starts with our company culture, and you know, we can do our money games and the contests and such, and I think those are short term, but it does make for a fun office. So by all means, include those things in your company culture, but recognize that it's a whole different beast in the workplace nowadays, and we have to do things to keep these beasts and feed them and to help us be successful, and that's what our company culture.
Awesome. Irene? Excellent. Thank you very much, Irene.
Well, I agree with everything LaDonna said, and I also would like to just mention that sometimes when you're thinking about incentives outside of their pay and commissions, think about time off. A lot of people really do like time off, even if it's just a half hour leaving early or things like that. And this day and age, a lot of the generations feel that it's more important to be with their family, and they might like that even more than getting a dollar or getting a gift. So consider that. But also, if this, you could find ways to add compliance to your incentives to make sure that you're not just incentivizing bringing in the money. CFPB made a big stink about that years ago, that you're incentivizing for other things too. And there are ways to do that. Simple things like we do CIA cards, caught in action, where anybody on the floor could find somebody doing something good. This is anybody, any level, and they have the right to ask for to give a CIA card. They write what they did on the back. They come in my office, and there's a box of what I consider junk, they consider gold. And they go in there and they get to pick something to say thank you for doing something good. And then I get to keep a record of it because I have those little pieces of paper. So if you go, that's just a simple way. There's a lot of other ways. But try to incorporate compliance into your incentive program too, like that you have something there. But I do believe that incentives are necessary in our business because this is just a tough job, guys. And if you want to keep people here and not have as much turnover, you have to dig into it.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you.
I'll make mine very short and sweet. It's people first. Make sure that we recognize that people, not things, have the power to make organizations stop or go. So everything that you do, I'm obviously incentivized towards your KPIs, but understand you're doing it for the people, because people are what make our organization successful.
Well said indeed. Well said by all of you. So before I let everyone go, LaDonna, Irene, Kelly, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. You are all awesome. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You.
Excellent. Also want to thank Solutions by Text one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.solutionsbytext to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. A final reminder to take a minute and fill out the feedback survey when you get a chance. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend. If you're looking for something to listen to, a recording of this, this webinar should be posted to the site by the end of today. So take care, everyone. Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.